Although the business is long gone, the legacy of the Showers Brothers Furniture Company is enormous in Bloomington, as is its legend. Once hailed as the world's largest furniture company, Showers Brothers has provided fodder for many an urban myth, while the facts on the firm's rise to greatness have been hard to track down. Bloomington Herald-Times Homes editor Carol Krause rose to the task. And who better than the IU Press to publish her book? Their offices, after all, occupy the original Showers Company administration building. WFIU's Yael Cassander reports.
The fact that certain cities thrive and others don't is often represented as a matter of destiny.
But in fact, the success of this city, of any city, has always been made to seem inevitable by the people who know better.
Eric Sandweiss is a history professor at Indiana University.
The actual story of the rise of this or any other great town and city usually masks the hard work, the accidents, the treachery sometimes, the things that cause one site to prosper often at the expense of another.
The occasion for speculation about what gives certain cities that je ne sais quoi is the forthcoming publication of the IU Press title, The Showers Brothers Furniture Company, The Shared Fortunes of a Family, a City, and a University. Author Carol Krause sought to delve beyond the myth of Bloomington, Indiana's inevitability by researching the one entity that may have been indispensable to it. To clarify, it's a defunct furniture company, not the university, that occupies the central role in this narrative of ascendancy. As Sandweiss might have predicted, many of the narrative's specifics proved elusive.
The books that would have contained the complete financial history of the Showers Company from the beginning to the end have been lost. We would have known how many employees they had. We would have had all the board of directors' minutes, you know, after the incorporation. We would have known how much the workers were paid.
Lacking this primary document, Krause turned to what sources remained.
So I read 60 years' worth of newspaper clippings on microfilm in negative, in low contrast at the Indiana Room.
As Krause discovered, the unlikeliness that a researcher would be able to retrace the story of the Showers Brothers was matched by the unlikeliness that the company would be established in Bloomington, let alone thrive. That a city existed at all in this spot was arbitrary enough.
It's in the center of the county. There's no other reason to put it here.
The founding of the State University in Bloomington was also a bit of a head-scratcher.
In those days, IU hadn't even thoroughly resolved the fact that it was to be the State University. It was still fighting that out with Vincennes. It's the oldest university in Indiana, so it felt it was entitled to the money from the state.
IU definitely didn't resemble a state university in the mid-19th century, nor foster the culture one associates with a college town.
It had 100 male students, just a handful of professors. It was more like a cloister.
The railroad didn't come through Bloomington until 1853. Its relatively late arrival had kept the city in a pre-industrial mode longer than most.
This was an agrarian society. Most people back then lived on the land and did not live in the city. The time when this book opens, in 1856, there were barely 2,000 people in Bloomington. The town was only 10 blocks across. So as you went from east to west, the roads were not leveled. And if you were driving in your cart or your buggy, the wheels would go up and down. You'd tilt to the sides. You'd pitch forward. There were little creeks and seeps running across the roads. Every house had a privy out back of it. Every block or two, there was a well, which was no doubt tainted by all the effluvia in the groundwater. People kept pigs that were free-ranging. There was no garbage removal, so I guess when it built up too much, you'd set a fire in your backyard and burn a lot of it. The chickens and the pigs would get the rest of it.
Suffice it to say that the city's draw for prospective entrepreneurs was not obvious. So let's talk about this itinerant Methodist circuit rider, preacher, C.C. Showers, the patriarch.
Yes.
It's not exactly clear why precisely he and his wife Elizabeth and their seven children came to Bloomington, but he set up shop here and he had some skills in furniture making.
We think that Elizabeth, his wife, may have had some relatives here because we do have a record of him teaching her brother, Isaac Hull, how to do cabinet making. I think that would have been the late 1850s. By 1860 or 61, he had opened up Showers and Hendricks. It was a business on the square, and they had a separate shed where their factory was located, and they didn't even manufacture most of their own stuff. They manufactured the more rustic, cheap, low-line goods, and then they imported the fancy goods by railroad.
As it turns out, this patriarch wasn't necessarily the best businessman himself.
Unfortunately, his venture into furniture selling seems to have ended badly. There appears to have been a bankruptcy, which in those days was a very embarrassing and humiliating thing. And it appears that his sons had to help pay his bills.
By the turn of the century, these guys were riding around in cars that would be worth today more than $100,000. What were the secrets to those brothers turning their father's business around and making it into the wildly successful business that it was?
Remember that their father grew up on the frontier. He was thinking in the old paradigm. James and William were fascinated by technology. In James's memoir, there's a wonderful memory of being at the steamboat in Memphis when they were unloading the very first locomotive engine. And they walked all around this gigantic machine. It was like the new future of America was with machines. So when they started their business, they could see what their father did wrong. He was thinking small. He was thinking old-fashioned. He was thinking furniture store on the square. And they were thinking, let's not just sell to Monroe County. Let's have a business where we will be able to ship stuff out on the railroad. So after the first few years, they didn't sell individual chairs or beds. They sold gross lots of them.
They were able to take the business and run with it. Also at the same time, pumping up, or as you call it, booming Bloomington, not only with promotional activities, but also actively creating the infrastructure of Bloomington, which not only served their own corporate interests, mm-hmm. but created this community, which is one of the large themes of your book.
Members of the Showers family sat on the board of directors of the first electric company, the first water company. They served as directors for several banks. They opened up a real estate association that would sell the lots in these new developments that they were opening up, which are now our core neighborhoods of Bloomington. They helped pave the streets because they were automobile buffs, and they also helped improve connectivity with the rest of the state in the form of Dixie Highway by the late teens or early 20s, because they understood by that time that once people were beginning to have cars, there would be tourism of a sort that had never really existed before. Showers women helped beautify Bloomington. They helped sanitize Bloomington because it was a filthy place with, you know, animal droppings everywhere. They helped build Bloomington Hospital. The biggest surprise I had in doing my research was to discover that one of the three owners of the Showers factory, starting in 1887, was a woman, a young woman. She was the widow of the youngest brother, Hull Showers. On his deathbed, 24 hours before he died, he made out a will, leaving her his one-third interest in the furniture factory. Now, if she had been a detriment or a ditz, her brothers probably would have bought her out, gladly. But they welcomed her. They drew up incorporation papers. They had them all notarized and witnessed. She became their legal partner. You know, equal partner. This is 1887.
And she was something like 23 at the time.
Yeah, she was 23. She was a suffragist. And she went into the factory that same year that she became partner and asked all the men to sign her petition to the state legislature to give votes to women. And all but one of the workers signed her petition. And you wonder what happened to that one who refused to sign. Yeah, Maud was the spearhead in getting a modern hospital for Bloomington. She had to fund it entirely by bake sales and public carnivals.
Considering the degree to which the Showers Company benefited the city and the degree to which the city grew up in response to the Showers Company, can you imagine that the same growth would have been possible without this company?
I think it would not be as nice a place as it is. It was good that those developments that made up our core neighborhoods, that they were put in place by men who cared about workers. It just gives a neighborhood a different feel than a neighborhood of horrible little plat homes that's put up to exploit workers. I think that they genuinely cared, and I think that that leaves echoes in a community of civic-mindedness and civic concern. I mean, you know, somebody would have built a hospital eventually, mm-hmm. but Maud did it first.
And got the Carnegie Library. It just goes back to that whole sense of inevitability. Was this a place where some major corporation was just bound to descend or not?
No, I think it was not. And I think Bloomington is by far a better place because the Showers Company was here and they cared about their community.
For WFIU, I'm Yael Cassander.
Carol Krause will be reading from her book on the Showers Brothers Furniture Company at an IU Press book launch party Wednesday, May the 16th in the former Showers Factory Building, otherwise known as the Bloomington City Hall on North Morton Street. Find out more at wfiu.org/arts.